So I live with depression and anxiety, and I call them, pardon my language, my asshole best friends. Because they're always around, but it's not fun to hang out with them. And so I live with them, and I used to think of depression and anxiety, I used to picture it as this giant boulder that I had to carry around. Like, there would be days when you would be okay, and that means the boulder was like in a wagon, so you could pull it. It was easy to deal with. But there were also days where you were underneath the boulder and you couldn't do anything. And now, for some reason, I've switched what it feels like it feels like I'm carrying a refrigerator. And it's not one of the new ones either. It's like one of those ones from the 80s. It's like Harvest Gold. And I don't know what's inside of it. Maybe my therapist should dig into that. But it's very heavy. If you want to know what it's like for me to live with depression and anxiety, go pick up a fridge and carry it around through your day and try to do all of your normal stuff during the day. And I've been carrying this for a long time. Started when I was young. I was closeted. I was closeted, I was hidden, and shoved all my feelings inside for fear that I would be outed. I grew up in a place where it was not safe, and I wasn't ready to be out yet anyways. So I had shoved all my feelings inside. I think that helped me develop my sense of humor because I was always trying to distract from those feelings. I forgot my place. What that caused is severe stomach problems for me. I carried all right in my stomach, and I was eating Tums like they were candy. I mean, it was just terrible stomach pains that I went to doctors to figure out what was going on. And it even culminated one night. I was with my parents. We were having this nice anniversary dinner at Red Lobster. And I felt terrible. I felt so sick. And in the parking lot afterwards, I was like, happy anniversary. And then I threw up. I was making myself sick from it. And so my mom wisely was like, maybe it's something psychological. And so I went to go see a therapist, finally, after all those years of dealing with it. And the first thing that she told me that I needed to do was cry, because I had held it in for so long that I didn't cry in front of people. That's weak. For me, it's weak to cry. But then she suggested, when I bristled at her suggestion of crying more, she told me to go see the movie Marley and Me, which is a dog movie. And spoiler alert, it's a dog movie, he's gonna die. And so I cried a lot, and now I cry a lot more. I've gotten through that, I know it's okay to cry now. So I come out of that, she helped me get onto medications, and it felt so different. I felt like things had really leveled out. I wasn't having these steep drops in my mood and where I felt terrible. But that's not to say that I'm always puppies and rainbows. So when the pandemic hit, I started to go downhill a little bit. And I remember the night before my 42nd birthday, I was in the basement about 3 o'clock in the morning sobbing. And trying to calm myself down by coloring in one of my daughter's coloring books. But I just felt like I was circling the drain. And I lasted about another week, and then I went to the ER. And it's really hard to tell the person at the ER, at the check-in desk, that you want to hurt yourself. That's something that's super hard, and that you don't trust yourself to not hurt yourself. But I did that, and then they put me in this room. I had to put on a robe. They took all my stuff away from me and put me in this room, and the room had a bunch of medical equipment, and they pulled like this garage door down over all of the medical equipment. Everything was bolted down. There was a TV in a box, and all it was playing was like the automotive channel. And I was in there for about 12 hours as they tried to find me a placement somewhere to put me and to deal with a social worker. And so they finally found me a spot and got my first ever ambulance ride, and I got to go to Shepherd Pratt, their residential facility. And I felt relief because I thought, finally, I'm going to figure out like what's going on, what's happening here. And it was quite an experience, for real. They check on you every 15 minutes in your room, day and night. There's always someone coming in, like just checking to see where you are. And I thought, I wonder if I could make it more interesting for that person and make it and like sit in different parts of the room each time. Like a Where's Waldo type thing. Like, where's Heather to know? And there's a lot of downtime, too, when you're not in group or talking about stuff. And I wanted to play. I was thinking, I was like, oh, I'm going to play solitaire. So I went up and asked the nurses if they had a deck of cards. They're like, yeah, but it's missing some cards. And I go, so you're saying I'm not playing with a full deck? And there was no reaction. There was nothing. It's like crickets. And then it's not often quiet in the hospital while I was there. There was a lot going on. And one night, it was about 11:30, it was wonderfully quiet. And all of a sudden I hear there's a cricket in my room. And it's so loud, because the rooms are really Spartan. There's like a bed, there's a desk, and a chair that are all bolted to the floor. And so it was like echoing around the room. So I got up to try and figure out where this cricket was. And I discovered that it was inside the chair, this big plastic chair. And I was like, how do I get to this cricket so I'll shut up? And at that point, someone comes in. It's been 15 minutes. Somebody comes into the room and sees me like contortioned around the chair, trying it. And she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, there's a cricket, and it won't shut up. And so she tries to help me, and she calls in another nurse, and then they call in a security officer. It was like a psychiatric clown car, just like everybody coming in trying to find how to deal with this cricket. And thankfully, or not thankfully, it was quiet. We never found it. And it was the rest of the time it was quiet, so I don't know if it was allowed to leave the hospital. It got new medicine, so it was allowed to leave. I don't know. So I came out of, there's also goals. Every day you have goals there, and they're little goals that the nurse will ask you in the morning. That, again, we're confined to this facility. We're not allowed to leave until the doctor says you can leave. And so the goals are simple goals, like today I'm going to take my medicine, or I'm going to meditate, or something like that. And there was this awesome guy, Gary, who was another patient there, who would frequently show up naked in the hallway. But his goals were always the best. And he would make sure he would shout them out so we would all hear them. They'd be like, Gary, what's your goal? And he'd be like, eat a cheeseburger! Gary, what's your goal? Fall in love! Gary, what's your goal? I'm going to go fishing. You know, like there were never anything that you could actually do with that. But it was so entertaining. I love Gary. He was a great guy. So I came out of the hospital a week later with some new medications and a psychiatrist, and I actually felt a little bit of optimism, which was nice for once to feel like I had things kind of, not figured out, but things were a little more steady. From there, I've been doing better. I'm actually in the middle of a medication adjustment right now, but that's okay. I'm learning that that's okay. And that what I want to tell folks, the reason I share these stories is because I want to normalize asking for help, that it's okay to ask for help. And if you're feeling like this, that you're not a burden to your loved ones, because that's something that hits me a lot. You're not a burden. You are enough. And you're not alone in what you're feeling. And so I would recommend everybody here to check in on your friends, especially the ones you know who deal with depression and anxiety. Because, you know, there's all this language out there about like, yeah, ask for help. But that's so hard. When you're depressed, every little task feels like it's the hardest thing in the world. So check on your friends and your family to see if they're okay. And I want to share this so people know that it's okay to ask for help. And also because I want people to know it's okay to laugh at it too. So thank you.